Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil. Bellerín, otro defensor, otro disparo. Monreal, gol. Marca el futbolista español. Marca Nacho Monreal. Pim pam pum.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, you'll hear from my voice right there that it's not necessarily a goodly morning, not a goodly morning from a football point of view, a tiredly morning to you from Dublin. I'm just back from New York, straight behind the microphone to do a podcast. That is the professionalism and dedication I'm showing to the listeners.
It's good. I mean, you sounded like you were pained almost by saying my name then. James, it was like you winced, James, as you said it.
James!
As always, apparently, it's sort of 5 years, roughly.
That's right. Podcast. I saw a tweet yesterday from Dan Clark, who's at DanClark_7. And yesterday he said, if I'm not mistaken, it's the 50 year anniversary of the Arscast Extra today. So episode 268, coming 5 years and one day after the very first one. We should have a party of some kind, but can we wait? Because I'm really fucking tired.
We can wait. We can wait. Did you enjoy New York?
I had a splendid time, I have to say. It was really good to get away. Went to see the Book of Mormon on Broadway, which... Right. I can't even begin to explain to you how hilarious it was. I don't think I've ever sat there and laughed at something as much as I did. And you know me, you know I don't really have a great affinity for the theater and that kind of stuff, but this was sensational, really, really funny, really rude and offensive, which of course makes it funnier, but a brilliant production. The actors and were amazing, the singing was amazing, the dancing was amazing, and it was just a fantastic experience. So that was great. Went to watch the match with all the Arsenal NYC Gooners in O'Hanlon's. On 14th Street. So hello to all of you guys and to everyone that I met there. Great to see you. Not a particularly great game. And I have to admit that it feels like the game happened ages ago.
Yeah, well, I guess that's partly because you've been away, but it does feel like that to me too, because it's much further out, isn't it, than we would normally do in Ask Us Extra, because it was a Friday.
Yeah, Friday, and here we are on a Monday. So, look, I have to say certain aspects of the game are a little bit hazy. I haven't had a chance to re-watch anything. I haven't had a chance to watch any highlights or bits and pieces that went wrong, apart from Koscielny getting a boot to his face, which we saw on replay over and over again. So that's seared into my mind. So I might let you take the lead on this particular game analysis, and I don't know how much use I'm going to be to you at all anyway. So we'll take it from there. Away you go, James. Take
okay.
over.
Well, well, we're out of the FA Cup. I mean, I don't want to suddenly fire the ball back to you, but given that, you know, we haven't heard from you on the blog, I was wondering sort of if you had to sum it up in a sentence, how you felt about this game. Can you manage that?
Yeah. Disappointing to lose to Manchester United, particularly at home, particularly after it came... after the Chelsea game, you know, that performance where we were so enthused and wanted to build on. But when you look at how we lost, the injuries probably mean that a cup run wouldn't be something we could deal with as well as we might like. So as annoying as it is to lose to United, I think given the fact where Socrates is out for a month, did I see that?
Yeah.
Right.
End of Feb, he's going to be back training, they think.
So. Right. And Koscielny hasn't broken his jaw, but still has a very tender...
sore face.
Yeah, very sore, tender face. Bellerin gone, of course, until next season. Rob Holding gone until next season. It's all a bit of a mess. And, of course, we're doing a lot to offset those injuries by looking to sign a 29-year-old winger. Brilliant. Very Arsenal. Yeah, so, look, I never want us to lose. It was annoying to lose the way we did, you know, Alexis scoring and everything else. But I think maybe just not having to deal with the cup is the only little bit of luck that Unai Emery seems to have.
Yeah, that's basically my thought too. Like, I really like the FA Cup. It's not a competition I ever would sort of throw under the bus. I think I hate losing to Manchester United. You know, they're one of the teams I really can't stand in this league. But despite all that, I'm not particularly sore about going out of the cup at this point. I just think, given our priorities in the league and by necessity the Europa League, it's probably for the best. And the thing that concerned me most coming out of the game was those injuries, because defensively we look really stretched now. I mean, the fact that we're without Holding and Bellerin for the rest of the season, like you say, it's going to be a month out for Sokratis, who I think probably has been our best centre-half, most consistent centre-half over the course of the campaign to this point.
Yeah.
And Koscielny, who looked like he was coming back to something approaching, you know, top form. It's a real, real worry. And actually, I think it was pretty decisive in the game itself. I think it had a massive impact, particularly losing Sokratis early on. You know, it wasn't too long after that we found ourselves shipping a couple of goals. And I can't help but think that's not coincidence.
Yeah, you mentioned on last week's podcast how much of an organiser he has been at the back. And we didn't look at all organised after he went off, that's for sure.
No, I mean, if you look at the opening goal, I mean, it is a nice pass from Lukaku, but Sanchez, whose goal was absolutely inevitable, might I just say.
Yes.
Especially given everything that's gone on since he went there and how poor he's been. And in fact, on the Askcast in the week, we had Moussa Okwonga on, a Manchester United fan, who was saying he's been terrible and he's finished and he's washed up. And I think that was probably what put the final nail in the coffin of the certainty that he would score. But he should not have been played on side, really. I mean, you know, you look at Maitland-Niles, he's a guy learning that position, and, you know, there's excuses to be made for him. I think Kolasinac was playing him on two, which is probably more of a concern. Mm. But Sokratis is the player in that back four who you would think might have marshalled that line a bit better.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mustafi and Koscielny, we've talked about them as a partnership in the past. In some ways, they're sort of too similar. I mean, you know, they both can be all right individual defenders, but I'd say they're sort of beta defenders. They're not the guy you want to lead the back line, really. And I think we just looked ragged at that point.
Yeah, they sort of tend to bring out the worst in each other, Mustafi and Koscielny.
Yeah, it's a bit like Vermaelen and Koscielny used to. It's not that dissimilar. And I think they're both sort of a little bit impetuous at times with the decision making. Koscielny's definitely got better in that respect. Mustafi hasn't yet. And, you know, one of the big sort of positive notes that I took out of beating Chelsea was essentially the relegation of Mustafi to the substitutes bench and the seeming establishment of Koscielny and Sokratis as the defensive partnership moving forward.
Yeah.
That lasted all of a game, unfortunately.
Yeah, how long into the game was it when Sokratis got injured? About
20 minutes,
20 minutes or so?
Yeah, 21 minutes, Mustafi came on. And
he really looked, I remember at the time, he's got a kind of sad face anyway, doesn't he? A bit like, you know, Droopy, the cartoon character. He looks a little bit like him.
Sokratis?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a downturned mouth.
Yeah, he really looks, you know, quite sad at times. He's got sad eyes. And he really, really looked sad when he picked up the injury. There was a moment where he was coming off. Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
But it was just more like, oh, I'm so sad now for me and for the team, because I know what this means.
Knows it means Mustafi coming up. Maybe. The way he reacted it to me, I thought, oh, no, this is an old injury. And he knows how bad it is. Do you know what I mean? It looked like that to me, where he was like, straight away, he was like, oh, I'm in trouble here. I've done this before. I don't think it's as bad as was feared. Certainly the sort of noises in the press conference and after the game, everyone was saying, you know, Arsenal quite worried about Socrates, how long this could be. And I think David Ornstein tweeted that they are sort of relatively relieved it's a month. I mean, I haven't seen a single fan be relieved it's a month.
No.
I think from our perspective, we're like, oh, good God, how are we going to get through this period? But yeah, he was pretty gutted to come off. And he was right, because it was only, I think, 10 minutes later that they scored twice in 2 minutes. You know, the defending, as I say, on the first goal, not particularly great. On the second, I mean, it was a good counter-attack. It was one of those where you're kind of crying out for someone to stop it early. I don't know if you remember, but Luke Shaw carries the ball a long way.
Yeah. Who was closest to him? Because my memory of that goal, like I say, it's a bit hazy. So
I'm going to have to check that now.
Should I watch it again? Maybe I can watch it.
Yeah, why don't you watch it again? Because, you know,
I'll watch it here.
It's good for you to get a refresher, if you can bear it.
If I can bear it. Okay. Boom, boom, boom. Man United goal 0-2. I'm watching on Arsenalist. I'll just turn the sound down if I can do that.
I think it's Torreira who starts closest to Shaw, but he doesn't get especially close. He just carries the ball basically through our midfield. Then he finds Lukaku, and I mean, you'd have to say it's sort of too easy.
I'm going to have a look here. Oh, there's an ad before it. Skip in 1 second. I'm skipping the ad.
There's Lacazette. Okay. Get within range, but never really thought about shooting.
Take the sound out. Okay, I see. Yeah, he kind of walks away from him. Oh, that's not a good offside trap either, is it?
No. No. And if you look where Xhaka and Torreira's positions are, Koscielny goes for the offside, Mustafi doesn't. The midfield don't track back. The fullbacks are basically on the edge of the opposition box.
I'm looking.
It's not
here.
Great.
No, Kolasinac maybe could have got back if he'd run the entire distance the way he ran the last 3 or 4 yards. He would have got back to Lingard. And I have to say, as annoying as Alexis Sanchez scoring against us is, Jesse Lingard scoring against us is even more annoying, because he has one of the most annoying faces in football. It's like Dele Alli crossed with Joey Barton with a side dish of give me somebody else who's got a very annoying face.
Oh, man. Craig Bellamy?
Exactly. That kind of thing. Like, I think the most excited I got towards the end of the game was where it looked like it might kick off towards the end, and I was like, just let him and Kolasinac have a fight. That would be great. See who wins. See how big his mouth is if he has to fight Kolasinac. I mean, it's one thing playing football against him. But, that's an annoying goal to concede. And it was just a few minutes after the first one as well. So, okay.
2 minutes, I think it was. And, I mean, look, it's a poor goal. Lingard, I agree, has one of the most irritating personas in football. An absolutely infuriating human being, partly because he always seems to do quite well against us. I think he's got a distressingly good record against Arsenal. So
there's
maybe
so,
that's why.
So many of those players, aren't there?
I know. I think that's partly why we can't stand him. he's one of those people as well who, like, when you see him on sort of social media and stuff, he appears essentially brain dead, but he's actually an annoyingly, irritatingly smart footballer. His movement's really good. He's one of those people who's quite difficult to deal with. He doesn't seem especially good at anything.
Yeah.
And yet he always seems to be.
But that's why he's annoying. That's what's annoying about him. You think, fucking Jesse Lingard, and then he's, you know, he displays.
If he was banging them in from 30 yards, you'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
But it's never like that, you know?
No. Okay. So that wasn't good. What else happened in the first half? Did we have any chances of. I mean, we had started quite brightly, if I remember. I thought we'd done reasonably well.
Well, we scored a goal in the first half, Andrew. Lest you forget.
Lest I forget. Of course, Aaron Ramsey setting up Aubameyang, yes.
I think Alex Lacazette had the deft touch, didn't he, where he tried to get on it the final touch before it reached Aubameyang. But no, it was good play from Ramsey to get in, and, you know, nice footwork in the box. I actually thought he had quite a weird game, Ramsey, where he sort of ended up with the ball in the box quite often. And this was one of the occasions where it panned out for him, but a couple of other times It didn't. He slightly overplayed or couldn't get the... You know, it was tight in the box. He couldn't quite get it away. And at one point I saw Unai's assistant on the sideline sort of screaming at the substitute saying, why does he keep back heeling it? And I thought, welcome to our world. You know, we've been wondering that for... why do you keep back heeling? But the reason is he had his arms outstretched as if to say why, and with his foot was doing a back heeling motion after Ramsey had just given the ball away. So I was like, you're a true Arsenal fan now. You've had that experience. Yeah. But in this instance... He did well, and I mean, Aubameyang was there to tap in, and thank goodness he'd missed a few big chances, hadn't he, in games prior? But
yeah,
it would have been tricky to miss this one.
Yeah, were you confident at that point that we could, you know, give him a good game?
I don't know. I think my main feeling was at least we've got a game at that point.
Yeah,
because, you know, and there had actually been a really good atmosphere around the ground. I think as a consequence of having beaten Chelsea the week before and...
Of the excellent light show, of course, which made
The light show.
Huge difference.
I think
difference.
That was largely responsible for it, the light show. But I think also it being a Friday night, the ground was not full at kickoff, I must say. People were, you know, about 10 minutes late into the stadium, like, you know, tens of thousands of people.
I did hear someone say that there were big delays getting in because a lot of people had bags with them because they were coming straight from work and stuff like that.
That makes
sense. The usual way of getting into the ground was a bit delayed. So that might have been it. But we did
but
have
it was like great. I was just saying, like, on the concourse and like in the stadium, you know, before the game, there was more... The Arsenal fans were more vocal than normal, so I was feeling quite good about it. And I think had we gone in at 2-0 down at half-time, it would have put a real damper on proceedings. But getting that goal back meant we were in a game. And with our propensity to come strong in the second half, I think I thought we had a very good chance of taking something from the game, even if it was a replay, you know?
Yeah, and we did have a good chance, I think, early in the second half, if I remember. Mm. Ramsey with a header, and it was a very good save from a keeper who, you know, could be a bit Lingard in that sense, making you don't expect.
It's the sort of save you expect from David De Gea, really.
Yeah.
But no, it was a good stop. And that one, I mean, I couldn't really believe that that hadn't gone in. And you do wonder, of course, how that might have changed the trajectory of the game. It wasn't to be. And one thing I would say is that as Arsenal pushed on for the second goal, it was inevitable, really, that United would pose an increasing threat on the break because, you know, we've seen Lukaku do it against us before, especially playing off that right-hand side. They had Martial to come on. They had Rashford to come on.
Those are two good subs, aren't they, to come on?
Ideal, really, especially if you're looking to kill the game on the break. They've got Pogba, who is very, you know, dangerous in those situations. And
amazingly, looks like a guy who enjoys football again, having been, you know, given the antidote to Mourinho's poison. You know, some of the stuff that people were saying about him and his lack of performance really was strange to me, as if, you know, there wasn't a good player there, or he wasn't ever a good player. I think he showed against us that he really was or really is. So, look, we had that big injury to Koscielny, which was obviously very worrying, a very nasty collision between his jaw and the boot of Lukaku. It looked completely accidental to me. I thought for a moment that they were going to ask him to stay on. It looked on TV, they were sort of having a discussion about maybe him staying on, and then they got him to do a few little movements with his mouth, like make an O shape with his mouth, and you could nearly see tears come out of his eyes. It was that painful. He couldn't continue. What did you make of the substitutes that he made there? Because he was about to bring on Ozil anyway, but putting on Guendouzi and moving Xhaka back into the centre of defence.
Yeah, it was an interesting one. I mean, I think initially, as soon as Koscielny went down, they sent out Monreal to warm up.
Yeah, which makes sense.
And I thought, you know, it looked like maybe Monreal would be a decent replacement for Koscielny. I guess they wanted to get Guendouzi on for his energy in midfield, and they didn't want to take Xhaka off because of his passing range. But I do think that it hurt us a little bit. One of the ways in which I think it hurt us is that once Xhaka went to centre-half, I think Kolasinac was a little bit more reticent to leave him. And I think understandably so, because you don't want to see Xhaka in a foot race with, you know, Rashford or anybody like it. So I think Kolasinac actually, he stayed closer to the halfway line from that point. And so much of Arsenal's attacking play is built on these overlapping fullbacks, particularly from the left-hand side, that I think it did hurt us. So yeah, on reflection, it was maybe a strange one. I actually thought Guendouzi was quite good when he came on. He was sort of typically busy and he, I thought, brought some life to the team in that last 20 minutes or 30 minutes, really, I suppose, with the added time. But he was getting the ball in areas where you don't really want to see him with it, you know, because Kolasinac wasn't getting forward as much. There was a lot of Guendouzi sort of on the left wing.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not really sure this is his game. You know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't really remember Guendouzi's performance that much, to be honest. But what I know is that if you play a central defensive pairing of Xhaka and Mustafi, you're asking for trouble, I think. Even if you can see some logic in why he did it, I do wonder if just bringing on Monreal as a defender to play alongside Mustafi might have been better from that point of view. I'm going to have to watch the third goal again, but my recollection is, again, we had a run through the middle which could have been dealt with a bit easily or a bit more quickly.
Yeah, Lacazette comes. That tries a back heel that just misses, I think it might be
Ozil. Oh, it's Ozil, yeah.
And Pogba pulls away from Ozil, as you would sort of expect, to be honest, has a shot. And I think I've seen Cech come in for some criticism. You know, I think in an ideal world, that keeper pushes that around the post. I think the bounce just before it reaches Cech is presumably what causes him to palm it straight into the path of Anthony Martial, who makes no mistake.
Not great goalkeeping, but the absence of anyone in that position tracking Martial's run might be a point of discussion. Not particularly good goalkeeping, but he did put it slightly wide. Yeah, looking at it again here is not great from Cech, to be honest. I do wonder, maybe, having watched it again, if he could have held it. Wasn't that much of a shot?
Yeah, I didn't think... I thought Cech... It's interesting, isn't
what
it?
What is Mustafi doing? What is he doing? I'm just watching it again here. Sorry, my voice is really... Like, I know he's sort of looking behind to see Martial.
I have a touch of sympathy with Xhaka and Mustafi because there are no fullbacks. And
yeah, neither fullback is inside.
So both players are sort of torn between closing Pogba... and worrying about the player outside them because they've got Rashford side and Martial the other.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying and I accept that, and they were left a little bit in the lurch because the fullbacks weren't there, probably pushing up because we needed a goal. But at some point as a defender, you have to make a decision. You can't just back off. If you go to the man with the ball and he plays the ball to the guy who's free outside you, at least you've made some effort to defend. Whereas just backing off and backing off and backing off ends up with, you know, Pogba having a shot which could have gone in, but which ultimately turns out to be a goal. I mean, they're just watching him. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, Pogba carries the ball a long way without anyone getting close to him. That's the thing. I mean, he's actually at the point where he takes the shot, you can freeze frame it. There are a circle of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, nearly 6 Arsenal players around him, but none of them are sort of within 4 yards.
Yeah.
And that is disappointing. But, you know, it's a cup game. We had to push on and try and get the result. And I do think we were just caught.
Yeah.
Guendouzi's, caught by a team.
Yeah. Guendouzi's not great there either. If you look at the way the move develops, like, he should have been on his toes straight away when Pogba picked it up. He should have been across. And what you said earlier about stopping the move earlier, I think he could have if he'd been more defensively switched on. And for all the good things that there are about his game, it's moments like this where his inexperience shows that make me worry a little bit. You know, those are things he can learn or things that maybe he needs to be taught. But yeah, look, I don't think it's a goal that reflects well on anyone, to be perfectly honest.
No. And I think, you know, inevitably, I think after the sort of high of Chelsea, there was a lot of disappointment about losing to United. I would say this is a United team in very different shape to the Chelsea team that we played. I think that's one of the big differences. I mean, This is 8 consecutive wins. They have got loads of confidence. They are a real threat going forward. Whereas we were playing a Chelsea game with kind of no strikers on the pitch.
Yeah.
Seemingly with a system they're not quite at home with yet. And I think, you know, that counted in our favour. I also think that the first goal is absolutely massive in a game like this. And I feel like, apart from Liverpool and City, you know, Spurs, United, Chelsea and Arsenal, I sort of feel like on any given day, any one of those teams can beat any other, and that the margins are pretty fine at that point. And actually, it is that first goal that so often proves decisive. We got it against Chelsea and we didn't here, and it left us in a position where we were vulnerable and chasing. But it's, you know, it's disappointing, but like you, I'm sort of fine with it. I think especially having seen Spurs go out of two cups in a week, that's lifted my spirits.
Yeah, I think you have to be a little bit sanguine about the whole thing. And actually, you know, when you think about the Chelsea performance, as encouraging as it was, you know, it was predicated on that fantastic partnership at the centre of our defence. And when you lose both of those defenders in a game, having just lost your best right back, playing a guy out of position there who we'd all like to do well at right back, and I think I made a case for him playing there, but has got a lot to learn. And maybe...
What did you make of his performance?
I didn't think he was particularly great. Again, I'd sort of have to watch again. But there are things about Maitland-Niles' game that are really encouraging, but others which I worry about, because I feel sometimes he can just be a little bit casual with the ball and off the ball, that he's not quite as switched on as you would like him to be. You know, he watches the game a bit too much rather than gets involved in it. He did have some good moments and put in some good tackles, if I remember. You know, he got stuck into a couple of duels down in our right back position, if you like, near our corner flag and everything else. But I just think in general it wasn't great. But I wonder, what do you do? I mean, do you keep with him and let him learn on the job a bit? Or do you put in somebody like Lichtsteiner, or put in Carl Jenkinson, someone who is more naturally a right back, even if you don't necessarily consider them technically or physically as good?
I think the one encouraging thing about his performance for me is that I thought he grew into the game. I thought he was better towards the end of it than he was at the start. And maybe that's a sign that, you know, he can learn, he can adapt. I think that you have to accept as well that if you do effectively gamble on a young player in an unfamiliar position, there is going to be a cost at times. And against the stronger opponents, you're going to feel that cost. I think that if you're committed to him and you're committed to the idea, you have to stick with it. But it is maybe harder to stick with it without those experienced centre-halves in place. You know, if it's the one guy in the back four who doesn't quite know what he's doing, you might get away with it. But if he's playing next to Mustafi, it's a very different thing to play next to Socrates.
And Xhaka. You know, which is not to criticise Xhaka for not being a good central defender, because he isn't a central defender. As much as Unai Emery might like him to be, or however willing Xhaka is to do the jobs that he's asked to do, which I think you have to admire in a professional, you know, let's be real about it. Even in midfield, defence is not the, what would you say, his top of his qualities. My brain is not quite working. I'm just trying to say that Xhaka isn't really defensively minded anyway, so making him a defender only exacerbates the problems that you have. And I suppose the other thing is that, like, as good as Chelsea was, and it was good and brilliant and enjoyable, it wasn't as if that was some sort of mend-all or fix-all that was going to, okay, now we figured out what to do and how to do it, and we're going to do that every week. I think we were always going to be a team that fluctuates in terms of performance and in terms of results because of everything that's going on that we know and that we talk about and we write about on a daily basis. You know, there are issues, fundamental issues within this team that can only be fixed with more patience, more time, and crucially, more money in the transfer market. So, it doesn't surprise me that the game turned out the way it did.
No, nor me. You know, I do think it might have gone either way, but I think the injuries played a massive part, like you. And I also think, going forward, you know, we didn't necessarily make the most of the possession that we had. I just feel like we weren't as efficient as we can be in the final third. But these things are tight. You know, look at Aubameyang's goal. It's good play from Ramsey, but his cutbacks actually aimed towards Lacazette, who sort of scuffs at it and it ends up at Aubameyang's feet. You know, there are other times in the second half where we got in on the overlap and the pass wasn't quite there. But, you know, sometimes they go for you, sometimes they don't. I just thought, actually, I don't often say this, I thought we were quite unlucky in this game, especially when you factor in the way in which our players got injured. I thought we had a little bit of misfortune and, you know, we came out the wrong side of it. But I don't necessarily... I don't expect this defeat to kind of weigh particularly heavy on the squad. In the same way that it doesn't... I've been able to sort of dust it off my shoulders. I think they will too, because I think they know there are more important challenges on the horizon. I mean, we've got a really big week this week with two Premier League games, one of which looks remarkably daunting right now.
Yeah. What? When is Man City? On Sunday?
Sunday, yeah.
Right. And we're playing Cardiff tomorrow.
Cardiff
night.
On Tuesday, which might be a bit of a strange game. It's their first game since the whole Salah thing, you know. So they might
I sort of saw that over there. That's just tragic.
Yeah, really sad. So, and often those games are quite... you know, odd or fraught when there's that sort of thing hanging over them. But, you know, it is nevertheless a game Arsenal should absolutely be looking to take 3 points from. I mean, Cardiff aren't the best. And with City coming up, you know, we need every point we can get this week.
Yeah, wow, OK. It's going to give Unai Emery plenty to think about, isn't it?
I think so, because, you know, there's that question of sort of,
who the fuck do we play at centre-half? That's the question.
That is the big question, yeah. And also, do you rest players for City? Is there any point resting anybody for City?
Would you be better making sure you get 3 points against Cardiff and just doing your best to keep City respectable? I mean, that's a terrible way to have to think about a game against a so-called top six rival. You know, but maybe it reflects the reality of our situation and the way the squad has been damaged by injuries. And, of course, the transfer deadline day. When is transfer deadline day? It's
Thursday.
Is it a 5 p.m. or is it an 11 p.m.?
That, I don't know. January transfer deadline, 31st January 2019. Let's have a look. 11 p.m.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I mean, why couldn't they just... That means live blogging all day about nothing. About nothing. Apart from we'll probably sign a 34-year-old winger from somewhere. I don't know. We might discuss the potential transfer dealings in part two.
Yeah, there's been a lot of questions about that.
Yeah. And maybe what we're going to do against Cardiff and everything else. Is there anything else we need to discuss about the Manchester United game before we put it to bed and never think about it ever again?
No, I think it is. I think it is bedtime for that game. And as I will just mention again, the sucker that I was able to take from Tottenham losing 2-0 to Crystal Palace. I did enjoy that.
Yeah, I didn't see. I only saw a little bit of that on Twitter yesterday because
you
I
would
was
have
sort
liked
of,
it. Kieran Trippier missed a penalty.
Oh, I mean, he's a Jesse Lingard.
Yes,
he's got
exactly.
A Lingard face.
Yes. Well, I thought that'd be right up your street.
I'm going to Photoshop a mashup of Jesse Lingard and Kieran Trippier and post it. And I bet you it's the most annoying face of all time.
I don't even know if I can bring myself to look at that.
You must. But yes, but you must. It's in your contract.
I must. It's to become a man, I must look at it.
All right. Will we take a break?
Okay, we'll take a break. Yes,
okay.
Let's do it.
We'll do that. We'll be back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions you sent to us on Twitter, at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, but not on the Facebook page today because I was literally only back and didn't have a chance to post it. I didn't even post anything on Twitter. You did that, James, this morning. So all the questions today are from Twitter. And if people hear any drilling noises in the background, it's James. It's at James's end, I should say. It's not
it's
you
me.
Doing
I'm
the drilling.
I'm drilling while doing the podcast. Yes. I'm very busy. No, it's my neighbour, and they've been drilling. They've been doing work there for about a week. Not the neighbour themselves. They've got people in there. It's a new neighbour.
Drillers.
Drillers, yeah. They've hired professional drillers. But I was here the other day, and they were drilling all day because I work from home, and I knew I had a podcast coming up with you, I think, the next day. So I said, I'm going to go around and knock on the door and say, look, are you going to be drilling tomorrow? Because it was much louder than it is now. It was
right.
Sort of very invasive. And I went round, and as I knocked on the door, it was very cold that day, and I'd not really been outside.
Mm.
And because it was so cold, my eyes sort of involuntarily started watering. So I knocked on the door, And the guy eventually came. I sort of had to knock a couple of times. And then he opened the door, and I was just there in tears. Like, are you going to be drilling tomorrow? Because
I'm going to do a podcast.
I don't know if I can take it anymore. He was so nice and apologetic. It actually worked really well. I think he was scared of what I might do to myself.
So. Wow.
Yeah, but I mean, one of the more humiliating moments of my life, but there you go.
Okay, well, there you go. Well, let's see if we can humiliate you further with a question, which comes from Rosa, who's at Rosa49, and he says, do you know why we're seemingly not after a defender? It seems absolutely insane that we wouldn't try to get at least one defender in. Please explain.
Well, I mean, I don't know if we're to believe them. The Mirror has a rumour, doesn't it, that we are reigniting our interest in Gary Cahill. Do you know what, though? I asked my brother yesterday, who's a Chelsea fan, I was like, we were watching the Chelsea game against Sheffield Wednesday, and I was like, what's Gary Cahill like? Like, is he good now? Is he bad? And he was like, he's fine. Like, he's okay. That was his take. He was like, he's not particularly bad. He's not done anything particularly wrong to get dropped.
Mm.
He's just sort of not flavour of the month with Sarri.
Yeah.
But he was like, he's decent.
He's all right, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have another follow-up question from Jamie P, who's at Doing the Frank. Now we have two more defensive injuries. Is Cahill now a good loan option, even after you both said no to him a few weeks ago? I mean, I don't feel like he's a good option, but no. He is an option.
If he's the option,
and possibly better than nothing. Is it better than nothing? I don't know. I mean, your brother says he's fine. I mean, he is a Chelsea fan, though, so you have to.
He might be trying to trick us.
Exactly.
What do you? Well, I mean, there must be questions about this, but what do you think about the back four? Just while we're on this topic, I mean, Jack Bernard says, with Socrates out for a month and Mustafi an encumbrance to a solid back four. That's very well put. Is it time for Mavropanos to be thrown in at the deep end and we can find out what sort of player we have on our hands? How would you deal with the centre-half issue right now?
That's the $64,000 question. I suppose tomorrow the option is, well, he's got to play Mustafi because that's the only fit centre half we have, fit senior centre half.
Yeah.
I'm assuming Koscielny won't make it for tomorrow, but should be okay for the weekend. So tomorrow against Cardiff, I think if Mavropanos is considered fit enough to play a Premier League game, because remember, he's been out for most of the season with an injury. He's only just come back and has only played, whatever, 70 minutes of an under-23 game. I don't know if he's played another one. That seemed to have been, what, a week ago or 10 days ago or something? So I don't know. If he was considered fit enough, I'd say, yeah, fuck it. Why not? Well, I mean, it's better than playing Xhaka there, for example, which is something I don't want to see. And just to reply to a question that we have from I'm Keenan, at Keenan Mulvaney, who says, is Xhaka an option for centre-back for the rest of the season? It would allow us to play Guendouzi, Lucas as a DM duo, or have I lost my mind amidst this chaos? And I think, yes, you have kind of lost your mind. I just don't see Xhaka as an option at centre-half, even though Unai Emery clearly sees something in that. I just don't, particularly when you've got to partner him with Mustafi. So why not? Let's give this kid a chance, Mavropanos. If he is as good as we hope, if Sven's diamond eye was as good as we want it to be, then we should have a player on our hands. But we'll never know unless he plays, really. In the absence of any other option, I don't see why not.
I have a slight reticence to bring Mavropanos in if it meant him having to play against City, just because I think I have recollections of young, promising centre-halves being sort of destroyed by, you know, one really bad game kind of hanging over them for a long time. But I think against Cardiff, it's an ideal opportunity to play him, and I would do that. And I think if Koscielny's not back for City, you've got Monreal, potentially, who can step in there, who I actually think is a pretty decent centre-half. I think he's probably a better centre-half than Mustafi, to be honest.
Yeah. Do you read anything into the fact that he didn't use Monreal there on Friday night, or was it more a case of getting Guendouzi on the pitch to give us something in midfield while Xhaka could, you know, do a job, so to speak?
I think it's that. I mean, we know he loves Guendouzi. You know, we know he's one of his favourite players in the squad, and he loves to use him, I think, pretty much in every game. So I think it was about that. Because Monreal, you know, he's a decent passer from centre-half as well. He could be someone who helps bring the ball out. I think, you know, he's very different physically, but sort of stylistically, sort of the closest we have to Rob Holding in terms of someone who can carry the ball up the pitch and interact with people. So I'm quite pro Monreal at centre-half, and I'm quite anti-Mustafi, but I do understand that he is going to pick Mustafi because of the lack of options. Anyway, so the original question was, do we see us buying or
why aren't we
in?
Why aren't we buying defenders?
Why aren't we?
Rob Kearsey says, should we be looking at a centre-back Christensen from Chelsea and a right-back of Aaron Wan-Bissaka? Oh, he's the Crystal Palace guy. He's good, isn't he?
Yeah.
Or perhaps a young and up-and-coming centre-back Elvedi from Mönchengladbach. Who the hell is Elvedi? Let me just have a look here.
I don't know if I know who that is.
Nico Elvedi, Swiss central defender. What could go wrong?
Well, what could go wrong? Exactly. It's been a perfect formula for Arsenal in the past. I saw that guy Fabian Schär scored for Newcastle the other day. You know, we were linked with him, weren't we, for years and years as a Swiss central defender. Never happened. I am surprised that we're not being more strongly linked with centre-halves. And if you believe David Ornstein, that's not really on the agenda for Arsenal. Or hasn't been, at least, until those injuries on Friday. They've been talking about midfield players and wide players. That is surprising. I guess the only way to interpret that is a big statement of faith in Mavropanos. But if that is the case, then we better play him and find out if it's well placed or not.
Is it possible that we're not being linked with any defenders now because we're looking at specific defenders for the summer?
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
It would be. That would make some sense, and we could take some comfort from that. But
yeah, not much comfort between now and May, but
no.
I think it's the best possible interpretation of our seeming disinterest in buying one. I mean, especially at this point. Look, it's hard because we don't know how bad Koscielny is. We were all expecting a broken jaw, which I think would have been, you know, maybe a couple of months now. I don't know how long it is.
Yeah.
Now that it's just bruising and tissue injury, it might be quite a lot shorter. So we'll have to wait and see on him. But yeah, we definitely in the midterm require defenders. So if it's not this window, it'll have to be next one.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of questions about the transfer activity or the rumours at least that have been circling around. Let's see if I can find one of the ones that I had here. I mean, this is Mark Holmes, who's at Holmes to 79. Mark says, is spending £40 million on a 29-year-old Perisic really the best way to spend our limited funds? Would we not benefit from buying a young centre-back instead and targeting young, hungry players going forward as our transfer market philosophy? And then, just as a sort of point of contrast, Abhinav, who's at Abhinav R on Twitter, says, is the high amount of pessimism over the Perisic deal, a player who looked outstanding in the World Cup, a sign of the broken trust between fans and the club?
Well, I don't know if it's a sign of broken trust between fans and the club, but I'll remind you that El Hadji Diouf looked fucking great in a World Cup too, didn't he? So I don't really use that as any kind of measure. I was just looking up Perisic's stats for this season. 25 games played for Inter Milan, 3 goals, 5 assists. He's going to be 30 in a few days. I'm not even arsed to do that joke. You know, I have to say, spending any kind of money on him would be mental. £40 million. I just can't see how that sort of a deal could be justified for a player who's going to come in on probably big wages. Isn't that the problem? Isn't that the problem? A, we don't have £40 million, and B, we can't afford to pay more players big wages because we're paying Ozil, we're paying Mkhitaryan, we're paying Aubameyang. It's part of the reason why Ramsey's contract was withdrawn, because we just simply don't have the ability to finance wages at that level at this moment in time. So it seems to me a strange one. You could tell me this, and maybe it's something I dreamt or something I just made up while I was crossing the Atlantic, but was there some suggestion that this Perisic deal could be a swap involving Mesut Ozil? Is that a thing?
That has been reported in some sources, but I've only really seen it in like the Daily Star. I'm not particularly convinced that is on the table. I think they're talking about a loan with an option to buy. So like a €5 million loan fee, I think, is what Arsenal proposed.
Huge, though. £5 million loan fee. Does that include his wages, or is that just what we'd pay Inter Milan?
I think we would then pay, probably take over his contract.
That's fucking mental. £5 million for 3 months of football, 4 months at the most. That's ridiculous. You know, if you're going to spend £5 million on a young player who may not be brilliant this season, but could give you value for £5 million. Paying £5 million for a guy like Perisic to come in and play 15 games for you, I don't really see the logic in it. And I don't really see any logic or coherence in the transfer strategy, at least the public-facing one. I think we have to accept that there are probably things going on behind the scenes, well, you would like to think there are, that we don't know, right? But in terms of the names we're being linked with and the standard and the type of player, it doesn't give you a huge amount of, what's the word, hope.
No, I mean, I can't believe you can say you don't see a strategy. I mean, the man used to play for Borussia Dortmund. That's long been our strategy.
Thanks, Sven. What a parting gift.
I know. I mean, his final prank, I'll give you another Dortmund player on a big contract. I am really surprised by this rumour. I think that Perisic is a good player. I think he's had a really bad season for Inter Milan, by all accounts, but I think he's a good player. And when he was linked with Manchester United in the summer at £40 million, I didn't really blink at that. I sort of thought, well, that sounds about right.
Mm.
But I find it hard to understand bringing him into a squad where you've already got Mesut Ozil on a really high salary, you've already got Henrik Mkhitaryan on a really high salary. You know, both players, 30 or so. Aubameyang, same sort of age profile, same sort of salary. You know, if you asked me, would you rather have Mkhitaryan or Perisic? Right now, I'd probably choose Perisic. But if you'd ask me, do you want both? I'd probably say, no, thank you.
Yeah.
I don't understand what's going to happen there. Unless they're extremely confident that they can move Mesut Ozil and Mkhitaryan out of the club this summer, I don't understand this deal. But unless they're very, very confident they can do that, and I can't see how they can be, I can't see what sort of market would exist for those players. it's odd. You know, Perisic would be on, you'd have to think, at least 150 grand, you'd think, right?
Yeah.
It's really weird.
It's
a really weird one. And look, I'm not denying his usefulness, because I think everyone's looked at this Arsenal attack and thought, well, it would be good to have a proper wide player with a left foot.
Yeah.
We haven't had that for a long time.
You can see logic in it from that point of view, but at a time when we're absolutely decimated at the back in terms of injuries, it feels like a sort of indulgence to bring in a 30-year-old left-footed winger on a big wage. You know, which isn't to say, of course, that we couldn't use somebody in that area of the pitch, but there are other issues, I suppose, which need to be addressed. I mean,
What it feels like to me is opportunism. Like, it feels like, I can't believe this was top of their agenda. It feels like, you know, I know Raul wants a relationships-based approach, and it feels like someone with a relationship has said, look, my player's quite keen to get out of Italy or out of Milan. Are you interested? And Arsenal have maybe said, well, we regard Perisic as kind of a Champions League player. We don't get presented the opportunity to sign many of them. This is a chance for us to do that, and maybe a short term fix that might get us back into the top four. And that is the absolute priority ahead of everything.
Yeah.
And I guess that the equation they're doing is, are we more likely to get into the top four with Alex Iwobi or with Perisic? And I guess they're thinking Perisic. But it is difficult to understand that joined up strategy. I suppose the only thing you would say is that we're also being linked with players at the other end of the age scale. Not even actually. Denis Suarez is like 26, isn't he?
26, yeah.
He's like an Emi Martinez of midfielders. You know, you think he's younger than he is. He just hasn't played any games. But the guy from PSG, did you see this story?
Nkunku? Yeah, that would be interesting. What kind of a player is he? I don't really know too much about him, but you know, this feels like, okay, there's nothing wrong with using your knowledge of a previous club, but it doesn't feel that strategic, does it?
No, again, it feels like someone Emery knows. Emery played him quite a lot last season. When Neymar was injured, he actually played Nkunku on the left wing as well. But he's kind of the Ainsley Maitland-Niles of Paris Saint-Germain, in that it's generally anticipated that he will become a sort of box-to-box central midfield player. In the meantime, he has played practically everywhere else. He has played, I think, right-back, right-wing-back, right-wing, left-wing, number 10, central midfield. So he is a very versatile squad member of PSG who's meant to be a decent enough prospect. He's 21, and that's one where, if Arsenal could do a loan with an option to buy, even at like 20 million euros, it feels like, okay, there's an upside on that deal, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like the kind of deal that's got more potential than slapping a big wage packet on a guy who's had a terrible season for Inter Milan, you know. No, I agree with you that Perisic has been a good player. I just worry about the profile of our squad and the kind of signings that we're making or that we're being linked with constantly. They don't feel like the kind of signings that have anything other than short-termism about them, you know?
Yeah. Aubameyang was that kind of age when he arrived and has had a very good 12 months. I don't think the issue is that a 29-year-old can't... he's going to be 30 next week, I think, Perisic. I don't think the idea is like, well, you're washed up at that age, you can't contribute.
No.
I think it's what it does financially to us that is the concern.
Yeah, and just in terms of the age profile of your squad, you need to start adjusting that, because we've got a number of players in around that age bracket already who are going to have to be replaced. And I'm not sure that replacing them with another one is doing anything other than kicking the can down the road a little bit. Did we talk Sven? I think we might have talked about Sven a little bit in the previous one, but his announcement has since become official. He'll leave after the end of this transfer window. I think it's quite interesting. I don't know what you've heard, but I've certainly heard a few stories from behind the scenes, as if to make out that Sven wasn't doing his job and that they didn't particularly rate him, which I find a little bit odd.
Convenient,
as if they're somehow trying to shape the narrative from within.
I also think that some of the sort of anti-Sven stories seem to have come from people within Arsenal's scouting setup who were there prior to Sven, and it wouldn't surprise me if Sven didn't have the greatest deal of respect for some of the work they were doing. So that may be part of it as well. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's spin on both sides here, undoubtedly.
Yeah, no question. But I just, you know, I think if you come out with a convincing strategy in terms of your recruitment when you're letting one of the most highly regarded recruitment guys in European football go, then it becomes easier for people to swallow that or to accept that decision. When you're sort of being linked hodgepodge with former players at former clubs and 29-year-old, nearly 30-year-old wingers who are going to come in on big wages, it becomes a little more difficult to convince people that that's the way to go.
So if we let Sven leave, or Sven leaves and we sign Perisic and Cahill, people are going to be thinking, I'm not sure about this direction, which I will completely understand. I mean, I think the problem is that Arsenal are thinking short term right now because they're looking at it and saying, it's January, in May, we need to be in the Champions League. What can we do right now to facilitate that?
Yeah.
And I do understand that, and that's why they're saying loan to buy, I think, half the time, because maybe if we...
Go on, what does that even mean, loan to buy? You know, we'll take him on loan, and there's an option for us to buy, but, you know, we're probably not. We're probably not going to buy him. We just want to loan him for... Can we not just say, can we loan him till the end of the season and fuck the option to buy because we've no intention of spending £40 million on Ivan Perisic?
Maybe they can, but maybe Inter Milan aren't willing to just let someone go on loan without the carrot of a potential permanent deal down the line.
But I mean, we're not going to do it anyway.
I don't know. I mean, I think if we got into the Champions League, we'd probably think, that's financially less of an issue to us. Maybe if he's been really good, we would.
Yeah, maybe.
I think the likelihood is we'd say, loan him. And then if we don't make the Champions League, we're like, well, obviously this would be financially mental. Let's not pursue it.
Yeah,
it wouldn't even surprise me if they set up some sort of clause where, you know, it was in some way contingent. Like if Arsenal did qualify, they'd owed Inter Milan more money or something like that.
Right.
That's not beyond the realms of possibility. But it is a weird deal. There's no two ways about it. I do think Perisic would probably make us better for between now and the end of the season. I really worry about what it would do to our capacity to recruit in other areas, though.
Yeah,
a deal of that size. When we need to do that, you know, come the summer, we need to spend money on our defence desperately.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we need to spend money on our defence now,
as soon as we can. Really,
you know, and it's not the Socrates injury, of course, is unfortunate. The Koscielny injury, again, unfortunate. But when did Hector Bellerin do his?
Well, a week ago, wasn't it, against Chelsea?
Yeah.
More than a week now.
You know, and Rob Holding, you know, we know has been out. I just worry that they're kind of thinking, we'll fudge through the defensive side of things because we're not that good defensively anyway. Does it really make that much difference if we don't have any defenders? And let's see what we can add to the attack. I understand the short-term thinking because there is a need to get back into the Champions League, but maybe a slightly longer-term approach and plan would work out better in the long term. You wonder as well, maybe if there is, as much as he's a faraway owner and as much as he is absentee from the club, you have to wonder as well if there's an edict from on high that is shaping the way we're operating at this moment in time, right? So is it a case...
How would that go?
Well, I mean, I'm just sort of saying that Stan and Josh might well have put it to Raul and Sven and Vinay while Sven was there, of course, and to Unai Emery that Champions League qualification this season is absolutely crucial. However you get it done, get it done. Mm. And after that, maybe you can start to put in place some longer-term plans. You know, Vinay spoke last year, not long after taking over, about how this was costing Arsenal tens of millions of pounds every season, being out of the Champions League. Mm. You know, and at the other end of things, Stan Kroenke has just put $1.6 billion of his own money, now, into the stadium for the LA Rams. That's going to bite, as, regardless of how rich you are, when you're personally guaranteed for $1.6 billion, you want to make sure your other franchises, as much as I hate to use that word, are earning as much money as possible, right? So I wonder if the way we're operating right now is a consequence of him placing those demands on the people running Arsenal.
That would make some sense. That would make some sense, because ultimately, you know, those people, Raul, Unai, they're all accountable to the Kroenkes, you know, and if they say, this is what we need and we need it now, they're going to move everything they can to make that happen. I mean, a few people have asked over the last few weeks, and you'll have to forgive me because I don't have it in front of me now, but what the success of the Rams and them reaching the Super Bowl might mean for Arsenal, if anything. Is there a relationship there that, you know, is there anything we should look for that might have an impact on us?
No, I mean, I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, so this idea that somehow Kroenke, if the LA Rams were in the Super Bowl, Kroenke would be somehow addicted to winning and discover that winning trophies is actually a nice thing and then transmit that to Arsenal with the same kind of, you know, investment in the team. I don't see the correlation. I did ask on Twitter, because I don't know enough about American football, whether we should be supporting the Rams or not. And there was a lot of absolutely no, fuck off. But then there was also a lot of, well, a lot of people don't seem to like the Patriots. So it feels like a bit of a Spurs versus Chelsea Super Bowl, as far as I can tell, in that there's no right way to, no right team to support, because they're both terrible. And apologies to any Patriots fans or LA Rams fans out there. This is just the feedback that I've been getting. I can't speak enough about the American sports teams. I did really enjoy watching college basketball while I was over in the States, by the way. Every bar has TVs all over the place, always showing college basketball, which is great fun, by the way. But as for what impact the LA Rams winning the Super Bowl would have on Arsenal, I would say none.
No, but we might have to pay for their stadium.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, I've just seen on Twitter that Gazzetta dello Sport are reporting that Inter and Arsenal are now negotiating a middle ground deal for Perisic that would please all parties. Clauses that would make the loan permanent, such as number of appearances or Champions League per qualification, Champions League qualification, are now under study. So, funnily enough, what I just said does seem like might be on the table, where that it's a conditional deal. I mean, it's very curious. I can't really see what's in it from Inter's point of view, to be honest, unless they just want to get shot of him, which I think might be a bit worrying, but there you go.
Yeah. Look, we have talked about this for a while, and we have not found any sense or any solution or any rhyme or reason. We can only speculate about why certain things are happening, and we'll get to the end of the transfer window and all will be revealed.
Yes, I'm sure that Raul or Unai or maybe even Stan or Josh will give a full lengthy interview in which they explain the thinking behind all these transfers.
No question. Communication has been top of the Arsenal skill set for a long, long time, and I don't expect anything to change.
What about this?
Go on.
Ado at Hand of Emery. Lots of talk about players coming in. Do you see any player leaving this week, even on loan?
I can't really envisage anyone going.
No.
I mean,
Elneny?
Yeah, sort of, but like I feel he's sort of a bit of insurance, Elneny.
Yeah, and he's been on the bench more and figured a little bit more regularly, hasn't he, with all his injuries?
I mean, look, he's clearly not somebody that Emery wants in his squad, really, because he would play him otherwise. But when you have so many injuries and when maybe you're thinking about using a central midfielder at centre-half, which could be what he's going to do with Xhaka, then you need to have some backup in the central midfield position, and I think he gives us that. So I would be surprised if anyone were to go. Even someone like Carl Jenkinson,
we might need to keep him go.
No, I think we just need to keep him around, because if we get more injuries or if Maitland-Niles doesn't grow into the right-back role the way we hope he might, then he's got to find another solution. So I don't see anybody going. I think this is a squad which needs additions, not departures.
There was a story somewhere that Jenkinson had been told he couldn't go out on loan, so I think that decision has been made. Emi Martinez went out, he joined Reading. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, and actually that segues nicely into this question from Adib, who's at @___Adib on Twitter. He says, with Cech retiring at the end of the season, how should Arsenal move forward with the goalkeeping department? All our keepers below Leno are very inexperienced. Should Arsenal splash big on a top keeper to bench Bernd Leno, or a younger one to deputise until they're ready to be number one? I mean, I think the fact that Emi Martinez has gone on loan to Reading tells you, you know, that he's not the guy. I mean, he's 26 years of age and has barely played any football. I don't see how he could possibly be ready to become the Arsenal number one or to genuinely challenge Leno, who, whatever you might think of him, is the same age, basically, and has played 350 games, 400 games more than Martinez.
Yeah. At that age, yeah. I think that in an ideal world where we had loads of money, I'd say let's go and buy someone who is a real contender for the number one shirt and, you know, pushes Leno and maybe even supplants Leno. I think given what we have to do in the first team, the requirements at centre-half, at left-back potentially, maybe on the wings, I wonder if they'll go for someone who's more of a kind of steady deputy, just in the knowledge that, you know, they need to allocate resource.
Surely there must
elsewhere.
Be a 29, 30-year-old goalkeeper not wanted by his club out there that we could bring in, you know, on loan, James, perhaps with an option to buy.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I suppose the difference about this is that I think you probably are bringing in someone, you know, if you really believe in Leno. And I like Leno, but I'm not convinced yet that he's like the long-term answer for Arsenal.
Sure.
But I just worry that there's so much other work to do that, I'm not saying we sort of call Mark Schwarzer and get him out of retirement or anything like it, but I just wonder if it's somewhere where they maybe save a bit of money rather than dropping another 20 million on another keeper. What do you think?
I mean, we did spend quite big on Leno. You know, it's the most we've ever spent on a goalkeeper, £25 million. So we have made a considerable investment there. Like you, I think he's been quite good, but I'm yet to be fully convinced that he is the guy who should be the number one. Maybe he's the right guy to be number one at Arsenal right now. But if we envisage an Arsenal that is challenging, I'm thinking this in my head and then just thinking about how ludicrous it sounds or how far away it sounds, you know, an Arsenal that might challenge for the Premier League or do things in the Champions League. I'm talking out my arse here. That doesn't seem to be like it's going to happen anytime soon. So, look, maybe Leno is the guy. If it were me, I think I would like the club, and I think this is kind of the way I would like to see this club operate, is to bring in a younger player with potential who can develop and challenge the incumbents. I think we need an injection of youth into the team, whether that's from the academy or otherwise. I think we it's our only way, really, of getting to where we want to be, because we're not going to go out and spend big money on established players, I don't think. You know, all this, I don't see any way we're going to spend 40 million on Perisic, for example. So I think changing the age profile, bringing in some younger players. I don't mean 18, 19, but you could be talking about players coming in at 23, 24 years of age, you know, who've got a bit of football under their belts, who are ready to take the next step. It's identifying those talents, of course, and we're not sure who exactly is going to do that. There is some talk about the, you know, technical director and the scouting guy, the guy who's our scout in Spain. Is going to head up.
Cagigal, yeah.
How do you pronounce his name?
I just said Cagigal, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I've looked at his name a lot. I can't really. Yeah, Cagigal. We'll just call him Caggy, the Cagster, Cagorama.
Francis, we can call him.
Yeah, that's good. We could call him Francis. Yeah, I mean, he does have a good eye for a player, as we know. He's found Cesc Fabregas, but, you know, that was 2004 or whatever that was, 2003 even, you know. So there are so many questions about what way we're going to build this squad. You know, to me, it makes more sense to bring in a young goalkeeper who can understudy Leno rather than a Mark Poom style signing who just sits around and doesn't play that much. And when he does, we go, oh, yeah, okay. He's goalkeeper, I guess.
Sure. they have to bring someone in, that's for sure. I can't see Martinez staying on as number two.
No, and there doesn't seem to be anybody else underneath. You know, Matt Macey is out on loan at Plymouth, but apparently hasn't been great and has just lost his place in the team there. I know there's the young... Is he Romanian? Iliev?
Iliev. Dejan Iliev.
Who got a new contract, interestingly.
He's Macedonian.
Macedonian. My apologies to all our Macedonian listeners.
There's actually a piece on Arseblog News by George Bird about the sort of the youth goalkeepers that are coming through.
Right.
And there are a couple there, but they're a long way away, I'd say, from contention. I mean, Iliev's 23 now, so...
I realise that the development curve is different for goalkeepers. I accept that. But I think if a player is 23, 24 years of age and he hasn't really played any first-team football, I think it's not necessarily a good sign, even if you are a goalkeeper.
Yeah. No. It's tricky. It's very tricky as well. Like, what do you do from there? You sort of have to go out on loan, but then by virtue, you're not really in contention for the first team. So it's a weird one.
Yeah, yeah.
Should we have another question? This one is from... Oh, where's it gone? Oh, yes, Chris Nielsen, at Chris Nielsen 4. He says, how come we as a fan base have become so aggressive? I'm thinking about the Xhaka incident. We all have our favourite and non-favourite players, but to abuse them like that... make of that little exchange between Xhaka and a fan?
Yeah, I saw it there this morning, just as we were talking. I don't know what was said to him, really, to make him react like that. He was telling the guy
to... Yeah,
the
stuff that we can't see on the tape, for sure.
That has to have been. It has to have been going a lot longer than the, 10 or 12 seconds of stuff that we saw.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really think abusing players is helpful in any way. I'm not sure that Xhaka was necessarily the right target. If it was frustration at the game against United on Friday night, I'm not sure that he should become the lightning rod for the way we played or the goals that we conceded. I mean, I understand that fans get frustrated and everything else, but I don't really see what abusing them does other than create an argument and something for the tabloids to get their juicy teeth into, because it generates so much interest, you know, clickbaity kind of stuff that it is. I don't know. I mean, there is a tendency for some people just to be arseholes, you know? People who use social media to tag in players to call them names and stuff like that. You just wonder what is missing in those people's lives that they feel like that's the right way to behave or an acceptable way to behave. You know, if somebody does something terrible, by all means, address them. But, you know, just, I don't know, just not playing very well or not being as good at football as you might like isn't a good reason to abuse somebody in public or on social media. And I don't think it's restricted just to Arsenal fans, you know. We see this stuff across social media and across other fan bases. We're just not as in tune with it as we are with our own fans and what have you. So it's not
any objection to Xhaka giving a bit back.
No, not really. No, if someone said something objectionable to him and he tells him to shut up, what's wrong with that?
I mean, shut up's not that bad, really,
in the
scheme of things. It could have been a lot worse.
It could have been. It probably was much more mild than what was directed at him in the first place. So, you know, being told to shut up is, you know, if you need to be told to shut up, you've probably said something you shouldn't have, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a societal issue. This idea that you are entitled to lambaste somebody for, you know, for not being as good at football as you would like them to be. You know, it's just, yeah. it's self-indulgent. And I know, look, we can sit here and we can talk about players and we can criticize their performances and, you know, that's all well and good, but this is a podcast. We're not sending this audio file to one of the players and saying, we think you're terrible. You know,
we don't go to Mustafi's house and put a speaker through his letterbox and play the podcast to him. No. That would be cruel.
And mean. And he would have every right to tell us
if
to
he told
shut
us
up
to
and
shut
go, well,
up. Yeah. Oh, he'd be bang on. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We would take that without any hesitation. You know, I just think sometimes people think that this is just an Arsenal fan problem, that somehow we're the only ones with these terrible fans. And we're not. We're not. Every fucking club has them. And as soon as you see a player do something bad on a football pitch, I reckon if you put a search into Twitter with their name and fuck off, or their name and die, or their name and, you know, something else abusive, you'd find a lot. You'd find a lot. It's not just Arsenal fans that behave in this way. So, I don't know. I blame the parents. Teach your children better.
I agree. I blame the parents. And yeah. As someone without children, I can say that.
Quite safely.
With no consequences.
All right. Well, we'll blame the parents for everything, I think. The transfer policy, the abuse of Xhaka and anyone else who got abused. I think, James, that I have to leave it there because my brain is very slowly winding down.
Well, wait. In that case, can I do one more question?
Yeah, okay.
Because I saw it last week and I didn't get to it. And the guys asked it again this week. And I think I've just got to, you know, I've got to do my due diligence here and ask you it. It's come from Wojciech Augustniak on Twitter. And Wojciech asks, would you rather fight one Hulk-sized Torreira?
Oh, fuck's sake.
Or 100 duck-sized Kolasinacs?
100 duck-sized Kolasinacs. Just kick them around. Simple.
Okay.
I don't want to fight a Hulk-sized Torreira. That's quite scary.
Can we buy one for our midfield? I'd like that.
That would be nice. That would be nice. I doubt it. Unless he is, of course, 29, out of favour at his own club.
And used to play for Dortmund.
And we could get him on loan with an option to buy. That's the only way it's going to happen.
Okay.
All right. I think we'll leave it there. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Thank you for listening. James, thank you to you as well for covering the Arsecast on Friday as well.
My pleasure.
We will be back next week to talk about the Manchester City game. Oh, God.
Oh, man. God. At least that's not the five-year anniversary. Can you imagine? That would be a hell of a party.
Let's keep fingers crossed we can put a defence together that can keep out Cardiff tomorrow night. And we'll discuss all that and more in the Arsecast on Friday. So until then, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.